in a series called Simplexity, and today the question is, at the Super Bowl, who can handle the pressure? We've been talking about that in this series, Simplexity. How do we handle the pressure? I'm Robin, welcome to Eastlake. I'm glad you're here. This is a church for everyone. And we've been talking about, in life, things become more complex. In fact, that's our definition of simplexity. You can see it on the slide here. The definition of simplexity is the natural tendency of simple becoming complex. Now, we've been saying that margin is the way to deal with that. It's the space between our load and our limits. And when there's not enough space between my load and my limits, I feel pressure. We started off talking about time. And that, you know, when my schedule is overloaded and I'm always running late for appointments and the laundry's piling up and, you know, nobody purchased the groceries and there's just a lot of pressure. When is the last time you felt like I'm running as fast as I can to keep up and I'm barely keeping up? And when you have a lot of pressure, it shows up in your relationships become rocky. And life gets very narrow. My focus gets very narrow. All I can see is my problems. You know, you have pressure and all you can see is like I'm running from one fire to the next fire. I'm always putting out fires. Seems like I'm always solving problems. And in life, nobody has just problems. But when I have a lot of pressure, it can seem like it. It just seems like it's one problem after another. I'm just always trying to solve the latest problem because there's a lot of pressure. Now, and today we're talking about money, and doesn't that dial up the pressure? Whether you have lots of money or no money or you wish you had more money. Money can cause a ton of pressure. And, of course, the easy answer, you say, well, how do you handle the pressure because of money? Well, that's easy. Just get more of it. You know, I have pressure because I don't have enough money. But the truth is, more money will not always take the pressure off. Because sometimes I feel a lot of pressure just to make sure I can keep the money that I have. Or I can feel a lot of pressure to get more money just in case I need it. They did a study to try to figure out who was the richest person that ever lived. And they landed on John D. Rockefeller. He lived in the 1800s, late 1800s, early 1900s, and they said his worth would have been like $338 billion, billion with a B. And someone asked him one time, Mr. Rockefeller, how much money do you need? And he said, one more dollar. Because if I'm relying on money to take the pressure away, it'll never take the pressure away. Because I'm never quite certain how much I need. You feel pressure. Now, Jesus said all kinds of things about money, and the Bible did too, and it's the big idea this weekend. Write it in your notes. My standard of living doesn't guarantee my quality of life. My standard of living doesn't guarantee my quality of life. They're very different things. In the Bible, it says, beware, don't always be wishing for what you don't have, for real life and real living are not related to how rich we are. And again, I'm glad you're here today at Eastlake. This is a church for everybody. It doesn't matter if you're religious or not, what your background is. None of that matters here. This is a good, safe place for people to help people find and follow Jesus. And talking about practical topics that we all go through, and money is one of them. And Jesus said, be careful about money, because you can get confused, and you can think that your standard of life, how much money you have and all things it can buy, can automatically give you quality of life. But it isn't true. They had a book a few years back. Some authors got together and wrote this book. And here's something. The book was called The Day America Told the Truth. Researchers put forth this question to thousands of people. What would you be willing to do for $10 million? The answers were shocking. Two-thirds of the people surveyed said they would be willing to do at least one of the following. Become a prostitute. Renounce their American citizenship. You can have $10 million, here's what they said. Leave their spouse. Put their children up for adoption. Abandon their entire family. Because we think, if I had lots of money, and I could get a certain standard of living, that it would make a quality of life. Of course, now it's not, I don't want to make it sound like it's just the ginormous things that this happens, because this happens in everyday life. We get it mixed up. Standard of living is what I got to have. I got to have, got to have, got to have. More. I want. This dad told the story of his 15-year-old daughter. She's walking around the house complaining about her phone. This stupid, lame phone. I can't believe I have to use this phone you bought me. This is the lamest, stupidest, lame phone. Dad, all my friends have an iPhone. You know, and he's just like, I'm playing a sad song on my little violin for you. The next day she's walking around, she can't find her phone. She's like, has anybody seen my phone? Where's my phone at? Dad, have you seen my phone? He goes, oh, that lame phone? I sold that on Craigslist. You deserve an iPhone, and you should get one when you save your money and buy it yourself. Because we get confused. Do we get confused? Why is it that even when we get the things that we've been wanting so desperately, that it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm satisfied with my life, that my life doesn't get all smooth because I got a new car or I got my nails done this week or I got to go out to an expensive dinner? Well, why is it then these are the things I dreamed of? And they don't produce a quality of life. So let's look at a couple practical things in your notes. You can raise your standard of living with debt. You can raise your standard of living with debt. So like when we talked about time now, you can't get more time when you run out of time. But when you run out of money, you can get more money. It's called debt. Listen to one politician. He put it this way. The budget should be balanced. The treasury should be refilled. Public debt should be reduced. The arrogance of officialdom should be tempered and controlled. The assistance to foreign land should be curtailed lest we become bankrupt. People must again learn to work instead of living on public assistance. The writer's name was Cicero, and he wrote this 55 years before Jesus was born, over 2,000 years ago. We all struggle in the same stuff. Debt, borrowing, and look what the scripture says: the rich will rule over the poor, and the borrower will be slave to the lender. You can be slave to a lot of different things, and you can be slave to money. And money makes a mean master. When I decide, and I brought some graphs today, I want to show you some visual aids. And so, look at this first graph here. Now that's sort of how our life can go. You start off in life, and your income is, sort of low, and it climbs, and then as it climbs, if you keep your spending in proportion, you have margin in between. So as you get older, your income goes up some, and then you have your spending that sort of keeps pace, but you have margin in between, and that margin, that's the breathing room. That's where everyone wants to live. That's where you can go to sleep at night and not worry, and that's the peaceful place. That's where everybody wants to be, right there. Well, look at this slide. There's the Americans. Your income goes up and so does your spending. Every time you get a raise, you're like, it's time for a vacation. I need a new pair of boots or five pairs. I want to go on vacation. I mean, and you get the raises. Your income goes up, but so does your spending. And they just sort of, and if anything goes wrong at all, look at this slide. Oops. Transmission went out in the truck. Someone got sick. All of a sudden, I'm spending more than I have. And boy, that's when you really ratchet up the pressure. And I know that we lose jobs, and I know that things happen that are beyond our control. But here's the thing: a lot of times we sell ourselves by borrowing right into slavery. And here's the ball and chain that comes every month in the form of a bill. And when the pressure comes on, I want to blame someone. It's the economy. It's the downturn. It's the president. It's his fault, or the last president before him, it was his fault. I want to blame anyone but me. Now, I'm overqualified to speak on this topic, because before Clarice and I got married, we were just starting to date. Visa sent me magic plastic. And I'm telling you, I needed Magic Plastic because there was a lot of people competing for Clarice. And that Magic Plastic, that gave me a little bit of an edge because we could go out to dinners that I could never take her out before, but all I had to do at the end of the dinner was bring out my Magic Plastic. And it was awesome when dinner was all over. I would just sort of take out my Magic Plastic and kind of set it on the table in front of her. And I was sending the message to her, you're with a real man now. I have Magic Plastic. And then we got married and it was the same thing. Some of our friends had more money than we had so they could go on better vacations and buy things. And I wanted to be like them. So I figured, well, I have my Magic Plastic. And then Visa, because I was a preferred customer, they sent me another Magic Plastic with a higher limit. And I'm like, this is awesome. And I'm going on vacation and I'm buying things. And this is just, it was like magic. Until the bills started to roll in. And the magic went away. And now I'm paying for stuff and feeling trapped and pressured because I had that Magic Plastic. And you can get money that isn't yours and you will feel like a slave. You'll feel like all you can think about is how am I going to pay these bills? How am I going to make certain that I don't ruin my credit? How am I going to keep up? Now, the next thing is totally different. Number two, you can raise your quality of life with devotion. And this is Jesus speaking. No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. And Jesus is talking about a tension that's in all of us. We all have this tension. I want to ask the question, think about money and how you handle money and what your life is like with money. And then, I just want to know, who would say to themselves, think of yourself, are you a saver or a spender? Are you the saver one or are you the spender one? And ask me, this, what's the answer to this question? Why do savers and spenders always get married? And man, that's when it gets fun. You know, because you have savers, I mean, they really think they're all that, and they're the greatest thing ever, you know, because they have financial discipline, and they're the saver, you know. And the spender, they think they're the one that has it all figured out because, hey, you can't take it with you. So they're spending and spending and saving and saving. And it would be nice, the old saying, you know, you meet a saver and a spender before they get married, and you always tell them the classic line, oh, you guys will be great for each other. You're going to balance each other out. Yeah, and hand them a hand grenade, too. Because they're going to fight and have conflict. And Jesus is saying, you know, it's not about saving or spending. That's not the point at all. The point is, where will you place your trust? He's saying there's an ongoing competition for my heart, and it's money. And you may be the best saver in the world, and your savings account may have your heart. Because when the chips are down, when you're in trouble, the first thing you say to yourself is, how much money have I got? Have I got enough money? And you live under the tyranny of being your own provider. And then there's the other person that's just spend, 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 feel good, feel good, feel good, feel good. I got lots of stuff. And then they have a ball and chain hooked to their ankle. And they can't enjoy anything in life, really, because it has the pressure of how do I pay for it now? And Jesus, he just kind of waves his hand at the whole thing. He just says, it's not about any of that. It's about who has your heart. In the parade of your life, can Jesus be the first float? He's just saying, can I be like the number one person? Because the competition for my heart is money. And you can have lots and lots of money or no money. That isn't the point. You can have huge dreams. Be governor of Utah someday. Be a quarterback for the Utes. Be a ballerina. Be whatever. Be whatever, doctor, lawyer, or just drive a truck. That's not the point in life. The point is, who am I devoted to? Who has my heart? Who am I devoted to? That's the point. Am I my provider? Or is God my provider? And that's what distinguishes the amount of pressure that I live under. Who will it be? And the invitation today is you can make a switch to Jesus. You can just say, no matter what, when it comes to money, I'm trusting you. There's not going to be two masters in my life. There's going to be one master. That's you, Jesus. When it comes to my money, you're the boss. When it comes to my money, you're the one I rely on. When the chips are down, the sales aren't there, the quotas aren't met, or there's more bills, I look to you, Jesus. You're my provider. I trust you. You have my heart. Now, a couple things, just kind of practical stuff. It's on the other side of your program. Look at this one statement here. Creating margin may lower your standard of living, but it will raise your quality of life. Because standard of living does not automatically equal quality of life. What Jesus is saying is it boils down to having a relationship with Him, regardless of money. Now, a couple things. Let's look at it here. And if you've come today and you're like, oh, yeah, you don't have the bills I have, or my things happened at work, just stay with this, because God brought you here today just to say something to you. I've got your back. I see your struggles. I've got you. Trust me. Here's one thing that Jesus said. Don't store up treasure here on earth where moth and rust and rust destroys them. Where thieves break in and steal, store up treasure in heaven where moth and rust cannot destroy, and thieves do not break in and steal. Wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will also be. Has anybody stole anything from you recently? At your work, did they change everything and you feel like I've gotten ripped off? Something happened to your family, your friends, or it just seems like in life, it's like, oh, wait a minute. You know, you took that from me. That was taken from me. How vulnerable that feels when you don't have control to change that. Jesus is talking about that kind of stuff. He's saying, you know, you're working really super hard to get everything together and you're thinking you've got it all stored up. And his analogy is even little things that you think could never cause a problem. What can a moth do? You see a moth go by, you don't even smash it and kill it. You're like, nah, that doesn't do anything. But little things can add up. And rust can spread, and people can take things from me, and then here I am. He's talking about a shift. He's saying if you really want to have a heart that's sort of immune to all of that, because it's all going to happen, store treasure with me. Nobody can take that from you. I've been thinking a lot about generosity in my life because most of my life, I've thought my money was my money. And I decided a couple years ago that I was going to take all my change and give it away to people, anyone that I saw that had need. And so I have a tension point all the time when I go to Smith's. I go to Smith's and you go to check out, and they have that cool little machine there that brings your change right down for you. And still to this day, I've been doing this 2 years now, still to this day, when that change comes out of there, my very first thought is, all right, I got my money. And it's like the perfect scenario for me, too, because I know that I want to give all my change away. It's a perfect scenario, because right there by the change machine, they always have a little plastic box that you could donate in. You've seen them, like a little donation box there. However, they also have the M&Ms right to my left. It's like the perfect setting for me, because there's my change. I pick it up and I put it in my hand and I look over and I see that bright yellow bag of chocolate-covered peanut M&M, which I love any time of day. It's the best cereal ever. Just put some in a bowl with milk on it. I just love that. You know, and I got the change right there. I'm ready to buy it because I want that, and this is my money. And then on the other side, I see the donation box. And I think about all the different people out there that I'll never even meet or know. I have no idea what this occurs, but I know this. It's there for a reason. Because they're out there. I'm in that tension point. I'm standing there and I'm holding the money in my hands. It's my money. And of course, that's the problem, isn't it? We all start with the idea that it's my money. You know, I've discovered is if a complete different way of looking at it is it's God's money. He gave it to me. If it's God's money, it just seems like I can open up my hand a little bit. Because it's His money, not my money. He gave me the money. I know you're thinking, how dare you talk to me that way? And say that to me. I'm a good American. I earned this money. This is my money. Yeah, and you made the air you breathe too. Listen to this. It's kind of cute. God is sitting in heaven when a scientist says to him, Lord, we don't need you anymore. Science has finally figured out a way to create life out of nothing. In other words, we can now do what you did in the beginning. Oh, is that so? Tell me more about that, replied God. Well, says the scientist, we can take dirt and form it into the likeness of you and breathe life into it, thus creating people. Well, that's interesting. Show me. So the scientist bends down to the earth and starts to mold the soil. And God says, oh, no, you get your own dirt. How would your life change if you just started every day and say, God, it's your money. You gave it to me. Would it be easier to make a plan for generosity if you're giving away His money instead of yours? Would it be easier to invest in heaven if you start with the idea that it all came from heaven? Because nobody can steal that from you. Rust can't get it. Little things can't take it. Because it's not about the money. It's about you. Nobody can take that. When you become someone that's connected with Jesus Christ and all the different things come into your life, and they will, that's what the Lord is saying here. He's saying, get ready. Little things, rust, people are going to steal. That's all going to happen. But they can't get the inside of you. Invest with me. And they change the commission plan. When the tuition goes up unexpectedly. When someone you work with that you thought you could trust takes something because they're desperate. Something that should have gone to you. When all of it occurs, if you're invested in heaven, your treasure will remain. Because it'll be your heart. Now, this last thing Jesus says, don't worry and say, where will we eat or where will we drink or what will we wear? That's where those people who don't know God are always thinking about. Don't worry because your Father in heaven knows that you need all these things. What you should want most is God's kingdom and doing what He wants you to do. Then He will give you all these other things that you need. I wanted to ask this question today. Who helps you walk with God? Who helps you get that straight? You know, if you go up to 20 people, 20 good people, and you say, God loves you, all 20 will say, I know. But they don't live like it. If you go to 20 people and say, God's got your back, they'll say, I know. But they don't live like it. And I have discovered that it is so easy to drift. It's so easy to forget He's there. It's just so easy to just start to live your life like you always live your life, and then you come to Sunday and you kind of catch Jesus again and I've got Him and then you leave and then you drift again and you forget and the pressure mounts up and mounts up and mounts up and it's everywhere I go and my relationships get rocky and I lose my focus and it's one problem after another and I come back to Sunday and I feel like, oh, okay, that's right, you're Jesus, you love me. That's right, treasures in heaven, right. And then I leave and it fades again. You know why? Because church was never intended to be an event. It was intended to be a place where we connect with other people. They're trying to walk just like we're walking. To be with us, to remind, I have this is something I have discovered about myself. I need other people to do this. Christianity is a team sport. It's not meant to be done alone. Who helps you walk with God? Who do you help walk with God? In a couple weeks, we're going to launch these, we do these things called growth groups, and it'll be a big chance for you. We throw them out there, and there are chances to meet people, and there's different activities or different things that we do. And in these growth groups, it's a chance to connect with people, to meet some people, to be with other people. And there'll be sign-ups and stuff about it. And I just want to say, it's a chance, because if no one's helping you walk with God, if you're doing it all by yourself, here's what the statistics say. Even if you're in a church that you love, you're like, this is awesome. I like this church. This is neat. I get to even drink coffee. This is great. This is a good church. You'll last 6 weeks if you're not connected to someone or doing something. I mean, some will last, but a lot won't. And they'll want to, but they'll be swept away, fade away. When you see those groups come up, those growth groups, that's a chance to step in. Because I have discovered, after 30 years of walking with Jesus, like, really, I'm walking with you, Jesus, I need other people to help me walk with God. And they're all wondering the same thing I'm wondering, and it's the bottom line today. Write it in your notes. Do I believe God knows and God cares? Do I believe that? All wondering the same thing. Red and yellow, black and white, Baptists, Buddhists in his sight. All wondering the same thing. God, do you know what's going on in my life? And do you care? We're all there. Tony Campolo is a sociologist that is on the East Coast. And he travels quite a bit. A lot of his traveling and speaking is in South America. Been there many, many times. And he would travel to some of the larger urban areas. And he was in one of the urban areas, one of the bigger cities in South America. Been there many times. And as he arrives back to the hotel that night, there's several very young ladies, girls, little girls, there waiting for all of the rich tourists to come back. They're prostitutes. People own them. And they station them there. And they wait for these men to come back with all this money, and that's their life every single day. And he's seen this before. He'd seen it on other trips before, and he comes this evening, and he sees it, and he's had it. He's like, God, please, he says a prayer. Please, God, I want to do something about this. So God gives him an idea. The next day, when he leaves to go out on his business day, he stops at the concierge, and he says, listen, I'm going to be back tonight at 5:30, and I want you to have 3 pizzas ready. I want you to have a cake and ice cream and candy and soda pop, and I want you to have all this stuff ready. I want donuts, I want you to have it all ready when I get here tonight. Have it all ready to go. Well, how much should I have? Lots of it. I want enough for like 10, 15 people. Okay, Mr. Campolo, we'll get it. And so he goes out. He comes back that night, and as he approaches the hotel, He sees all these little girls, and he notices these 3 off to the side. They're just like huddled, and he's thinking, gosh, they look like they could almost be sisters or their friends. And he goes over to them, and he says, I want to buy these 3 right here. I'm buying these 3 for the whole night. And he said he just watched the color drain out of their face. They follow him into the elevator and up to the room. And he goes into the room, and they're thinking, this is going to be just like any other time. And they start to, you know, prepare themselves. He says, we're not doing that. Tonight we're having a party. And they're confused and suspicious. He says, no, you don't understand. We're going to have a party here tonight. And he tells them to go over and sit on the edge of the bed. And he says, don't worry. And then there's the knock at the door, and they start bringing in the pizza and the cake and the ice cream and the candy and the soda pop, and they start stacking it everywhere. And he'd gone out, and he'd gotten all these cartoons, American cartoons, and he puts these cartoons on the TV, and the girls just sit on the edge of the bed, and they won't even budge. They're suspicious. They don't know what to do. They're afraid. How unusual. He's like, no, this is all for you tonight. We're having a party, party, party. Even that hat they could wear. It's going to have a party. And then he realized, oh, they're afraid of me. So he goes over and he stands in the corner of the room and he just squats down and he just kind of sinks into the corner trying to disappear and he watches them. And finally, after quite some time, one of the girls broke and she went and grabbed a donut and hurried back to the bed. And another little girl scolded her. But then she broke her donut and gave her some and she said, maybe parties aren't bad. And then they tore into the ice cream. And then the pizza, and then the soda. And the cartoons were going full blast, and they started to watch the cartoons, and he said he watched them. And he said right before his very eyes, these little girls that were all made up with makeup all over them and everything, he said, it's like they turned back into little children again. And pretty soon they were wrestling with each other on the bed and they're laughing and they just eat way too much. And one of them falls asleep. And then the next one. And then the next one. And now it's like 3 hours late and they're all just cuddled up on this bed and they're sleeping. There's stuff all over the place. And he's just been watching all this, Tony Campolo. And he decides, I'm going to say a prayer over him. And so he stands up and he walks over and he puts his hands out and he starts to say a prayer. And as he's starting to say this prayer, and his prayer is like, God, but what good did it do? I mean, they're going to have their same old life. I mean, this was the big idea. I mean, God, what good did this really do for them? And he said he heard the voice of the Lord say, oh, it did good. Because now they know someone bigger cares about them. And that means everything. Someone bigger cares about them. Someone bigger cares about you. He sees what's happening in your life. He knows about it. And he cares. And he made sure you were here today to know, regardless of what life looks like, he's bigger. He knows.